Dearest friends, do you ever wonder, who am I? Why am I here? What is the meaning of life? Why do I keep repeating the same patterns, and how can I change them? Why am I free from being able to have the life that I've always dreamed of, and what is stopping me from having this? How do I meditate? What is an aura, and how do I see one? How can I come to a sense of well-being physically and spiritually, always? How can I remain in a state of absolute love, that soulful love, felt and expressed from within the heart of the soul, or we may say unconditional love, bliss, peace, and spiritual oneness and life continuously? Dr. Patty Dunn and Lady Diamond, in co-creation with Spirit, shows you the path through the new book called Stepping into Spiritual Oneness, Spiritual Rememberings of the Soul Through Life Experience, available at Diamond Lady Publishing, www.diamondladypublishing.net.
Do you feel like there's something happening in your home or business? Something you can't explain? Do you think that whatever is happening, seems to be paranormal. Do they exist? Florida Ghost Hunters at FloridaGhostHunters.com are looking for haunted locations throughout Central Florida. Let the team at Florida Ghost Hunters investigate your paranormal experience. Their mission is to disprove a haunting with science, to find a reasonable explanation to a problem, and whatever is left becomes evidence. FloridaGhostHunters.com. If you've experienced paranormal activity in your home or business, you are urged to visit FloridaGhostHunters.com and click Need Help. FloridaGhostHunters.com.
You are listening to Ghostly Time with your hosts Doug and Scott L.
That's right, this is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
I'm Bonnie.
I'm Keith.
Keith, thanks again for coming and hanging out with us tonight. We really appreciate it,
man. Thank you for putting up with me.
And this, it's great because we have, like, stereo Keith going on tonight, too.
Yeah, it's kind of scary.
Because we have you talking on the breaks.
Kind of hot.
That was a fun session, having him come in here. We just did one. If you hear the original reels of that thing, it's hilarious. It's so funny.
I have
the original reel. Yeah, it's so funny. Robbie is a full-time helper, author, and workshop and seminar speaker, where he offers teachings in the spirit of light, of God, and the communication of the afterlife, connecting to those our loved ones crossed over, and sharing in the love and understanding of both life here and life on the other side. He is one of the things, one of the main things Rob is committed to.
Mm-hmm.
I just totally slaughtered that thing, didn't I? But Robbie, I'm very sorry. Welcome to Ghostly Talk.
And his website is robbiethomas.net, and it's R-O-B-B-I-E.
Mm-hmm. Thomas.net. Welcome to the show, Robbie. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
It's our
pleasure. Hey, you slaughtered it.
I killed it. I don't know. We try. Doug's very good at this stuff. Doug has really gotten good at this.
Yes, he has.
Doug is like the master of reading stuff like this. He can knock them right out with perfect tonality. He sounds great. Me, I just trip over words, miss words, misspell words, mispronounce words.
Hey, I get freaked out by names.
You don't want
to slaughter someone's name.
Robbie, you mentioned something funny on break, and if you don't mind, I want to start out with this. We talked a little bit about Star Trek on break, just a little bit. And
we're geeks.
Can you please relay this story? Do you mind relaying this story to everybody?
No, I don't mind. It's cool. We were talking about Star Trek, and I said, you know that Beam Me Up Scotty, Scotty from Star Trek,
yeah.
is Sarnia.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, yeah. And I said, I had an incident with his sister, and she rear-ended me about 3 years ago. And sent my kids from the back of the van forward, all to the front of the van.
Oh my God!
And that was a hard hit. So when she tried to get away, there was another driver who stopped her. And we get out, and she starts to talk. And I said, "Give me your information." She was very belligerent. Said, "No, there's no damage." I went back to the van. I'm looking and scratching my head, and my bumper was actually bent into the back seat. So there was no damage. I look at her car, and her bumper is completely torn off. And I'm thinking,
hey, no problem at all. Let's just go on about our day.
Isn't that how your car looked before?
Yeah, God.
Yeah.
Tis only a scratch.
Like, uh-oh, get Mako.
Rob, Robbie, I think you're being a little too critical on this lady, all right? I think just because your bumper's in your back seat's no big deal.
Yeah, just because the kids went flying through the front window, it doesn't matter.
That's ridiculous. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's just a side story. But yeah, that's how I met her, and lovely lady. But next.
Did she get out? What are you doing, man? What are you doing? You stopped the car at the red light? What are you doing? What are you thinking?
I was, you know, I was sitting there waiting for her to pull out the phaser.
I know there's a million one-liners we could just, like, throw on this one, but let's move on.
Not me, because I didn't watch Star Trek.
Robbie, what's going on? I know you and Bonnie, from what I understand, you guys had, like, a four-hour, like, jam session or something today. A lot of things were expressed. There was a lot of sentiments expressed over the line.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think you guys really made a connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bonnie's lovely. We, and I am sugarcoating this just to get brownie points. I'm honest, too. So, yeah, what's gone on? Well, the new movie, my release came out about 6 weeks ago, Dead Whisper.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it's taken the paranormal realm by storm, which is fantastic because we want, you know, everybody to look and say, wow, you know, we can do this. Everybody can, you know, relate to it, and it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The way it formulated was I was on the Natalie Holloway case, and I had a show on BBS Radio one time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I met Ronald James. And so when things got flubbed up with the CIA agent and what have you, information got leaked out, Ron kind of pulled back and said, well, let's do something different. And I said, well, you know, I want to do this ghost show, and I want to and get it done properly. No Hollywood wish-wash. I want it in your face, straightforward, and mm-hmm. honest, good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So then I formulated the group, and I found the Indiana Ghost Trackers, you know, very integral people, loved them.
Yeah.
You know, Michael McDowell and Michael Esposito and Michelle Huff and Christopher Mojica.
Michael McDowell actually just called me about 15 minutes before the show started, as a matter of fact. We're actually going out to the Indiana Ghost Trackers Awards Banquet next mm-hmm. weekend to hang out with those guys.
So fantastic. Where's my invitation?
Didn't he get a hold of you? Come with us. Just come with us. You're not that far away, are you? I don't think you're that
no.
far.
No. Oh, shoot the bugger.
Come on out with us.
Okay, I'm going to be there.
Seriously, we'll talk it over if you want.
Yeah, because you're just right across the border from me.
I know. You're not that far from us. We can maybe we'll talk more about that later if
yeah.
you want, okay?
Yeah, okay.
But, yeah, we'll maybe we can work something out. We'll all go together. That should be
yeah, cool. That sounds great.
Yeah, we'll work it out.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
All right, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off again.
No, that's okay. Yeah, so we did that, and now on the 17th, 18th, and 19th of this month here,
mm-hmm.
New Dominion Pictures, Ronald James, and the Indiana Ghost Trackers, and myself, we're supposed to be going down to Sally House, and we're doing some experiments where they've got some instruments that are newly invented to read my brain waves and things like that when they hook me
Very
up
cool.
to when I connect.
Mm.
So this is all new stuff that's going to happen. I'm waiting on the phone call for that.
Mm.
And what else do we got? March, I'm down in Bakerville, British Columbia. We're shooting a five-episode pilot. It's a complete ghost town down there. I've also, with that production company,
mm-hmm.
they're associated with Lion Gates Films. And they've scripted a movie out of my second book. And they went ahead and looked at my seventh book, and they've taken what I've written up about Dead Whisper. And the title's called Dead Whisper, Conscious Echoes. And they've taken the Al Capone speakeasy and the Mantino State Hospital through my eyes, what actually happened, what I felt, what I seen, and what was verified on the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they're twisting it, and they're making it into like a horror flick.
Oh, okay.
So we got that going on. And I got off the phone today with award-winning screenwriter Gloria Shepherd. We've been working on the murder case of Brian Jones, the founder of the Rolling Stones, for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
She had James Van Prague there for a while working on it. Yeah, and then after that, she called me up. I did a missing persons case, and the producer for the X-Zone was missing. So they called me up and said they had a couple of psychics say that he was dead and he was floating in the water and blah, blah, blah. And I said, no, he's just mad. He'll call you within 3 days. He's miffed that, not getting the promotion. And they said, well, you know, thank you, and we love you, Rob, and blah, blah, blah. And sure enough, 2 days later, I get an email and phone calls, you know, thank you so much, you're right. And he did call and talk to his mom. He was mad because he got passed up for promotion, blah, blah, blah.
Oh.
So then that's how I met Gloria Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
She was looking for someone to take over the case, so we finished her book. It's coming out shortly. Straight to the heart, the Rolling Stone murder. And I'm the contributing author to her book as well. And so now she wants me to do the movie, and we're hooking up to do this movie very shortly here in the spring.
I told you he was a busy man.
How do you keep up?
You know, here's a secret. Now, folks, ready? I live in the house that Estrogen built because my house is full of women. and if I can surpass that, I'm doing good.
Yeah, I'm surprised you're on the phone right now.
Oh, yes. No, but seriously, there's that. And I wrote I'm a contributing author to Kevin Smith and his new book, Gods in the Garden.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, and so, yeah, there's a lot going on. It's a tremendous amount. And as we're speaking right now, Mark from Skybit or Rigtown Pictures, who's with associated with Liongate, is in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
He's pitching a series that I've done murder cases for the last 16 years. So they have a whole one season shows written up, but they've taken them and they twisted them into a little bit of horror. So you can get your factual case, and they're going to twist it and make it into a little bit of a horror to capture people's essence.
Mm-hmm.
And they've handed the script to Roddy Piper.
Wow! No way!
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
I'm here to do two things, kick butt and chew bubble gum. And I'm all out of bubble gum. I'm sorry, I had to throw that out there. Roddy Piper, I gotta say, Roddy Piper has to be my favorite professional wrestler of all time. I'm not a huge wrestling fan, but back in the 80s, when he'd walk out to the ring with that whole bagpipe cadence
and
behind him,
that had to be the most
gnarly thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Because he had the most intense look on his face, like he was going in there to rip that guy's soul out. That's what he was gonna do.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
He's so changed now. He's distinguished and
he is. Yeah,
yeah, he just had a world premiere movie, Blind Eye the movie,
mm-hmm.
and you can check it out on blindeyethemovie.com.
Okay.
It just came out, and that's the producer I'm working with that wants to work with me, who's in Hollywood right now, and he loved the show. Hollywood loves the idea of the series, and that the fact that there's the real medium who's going to be in the show, and they handed it to Roddy. So Roddy's going to be the cop who sits on the fence and who's going to bug my butt all the time. there's the cast, they're after the lone gunman from the X-Files. I hear that he's going to be probably coming aboard. So there's quite a bit of integral individuals in this.
Wow. Hmm.
You said they worked with the lone gunman from the X-Files?
No, they're trying to get him to come on the cast.
All three of them?
No, just the one. There's just the one. Gunman. Yeah.
Did I mess up? Because I know we've been talking with Dean Haglund actually a little bit. I'll let the cat out of the bag. Dean Haglund was the actual. He was the cool one, I thought. As far as the Lone Gunman were concerned, from the X-Files, he was the cool one. He had the Ramones T-shirt on and stuff like that, which is right up my alley. We've been working on getting him to come on the show possibly down the road here. So that's cool. Yeah, he's really cool. He's a really really cool guy.
Right on.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun. You're talking about, you've been kind of going through some of the stuff you've been working on, which is, again, I'm like, okay, if I have to like do laundry and like fill my gas tank in one day, I'm pooped.
That's
all right?
A busy day.
I'm done. It's time for a nap. Okay.
Yeah.
So I have to commend you on the amount of the work you're taking on. It's a lot of stuff to do. But you talked a lot about murder cases. I was wondering if we could talk maybe about some of these cases if we can talk about them.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. How about one in your backyard?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
This is made for TV movie. This is a real freaky one. I get this call one day, and lady says, "I've seen you written up in the Times Herald, and I want to ask you a few questions." I said, "Sure, go ahead."
Mm-hmm.
And she starts going through about her son being murdered, suicide. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Okay, mm-hmm. I get the drift of what's going on," and I'm listening to her, and she says, "I want to sue the police. You got to help me sue the police, and I don't work that way."
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I said, "Is there someone I can speak to in your family? I'd love to help you." And so she passed me to her daughter. Her daughter calls me, and we had many conversations and everything. And I'm starting to talk, and I go, it's really funny because he's given me the name. When I'm talking to Sarah, I'm saying, "Sarah, he gave me the name, and it's John and or James, James, and it's back and forth, James and John." And I'm going, "This is really funny. It's switching of the names." And then she gasps, and I said, "Don't say nothing, but we're going to continue on here."
Mm-hmm.
And then I get the name Walter, and she gasps again. And then I start talking about the street and the park, and I name the street and the park and even the actual graveyard that he's buried in. And I'm telling her this, and she goes, "It's really funny because the one guy that we figured that helped out in this murder actually switched his name to my brother's name legally." And I said, "What? How sick is that? That's why he's showing me the changing of the name."
Wait, okay, let me get this straight. Just I want to make sure I'm processing here. The man that they thought had murdered this boy changed his name to the boy's name. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
all right. I'll save my questions to the end.
Okay. Yeah. No problem. And so I give her that, and then she goes, "The second name, the Walt name." So Walter and that one name, that's the guy's exact name, and that's the other party that we were looking at. And I said, "Okay, well, this is what he's giving to me now." And so we went through the whole scenario, and then she says, "His wife tried to kill him a few years back and stabbed him." And so somehow she got off and he loved her and dropped charges and stuff like this. And so I said, well, you know, she's involved in this. And I told her all this prior to her telling me that she stabbed him the first time. And so the police wanted to sit down and talk about this. So I gave them all the information. The bugger of the thing was the lady, his mom, had the house torn down. All evidence was gone.
Wow.
Because, you know, having that, finding him in the basement. Now, this is how they found him. I said, you know, it's really funny, too. Before we go into the aspect of me telling you how you found him,
mm-hmm.
he had two marks on his neck, one on the lower and one on the upper around the jawline going up. And she says, it's really funny. I said, and it's a wire. And she goes, how'd you know? And I said, because I'm seeing it. And she said, because when he was hanging, his feet were on the ground flat. They had a crate in front of his legs and a crate behind his legs, propped him up, and the wire was there. And the coroner said, how could he hang? And just with the weight of his body, that would create a little bit of a mark, sure, but he was propped up.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but did you miss the mark around the lower neck where he was choked? So he was choked prior to being hung, so it's not a suicide.
So it was a setup. It was a setup, more or less.
Exactly. So that's why the case got reopened, and those three have fled, and they're looking for them.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's just, okay, he changed his name to this boy's name. I don't even know where to begin on something like that. I mean, of course, like Bonnie said a few minutes ago, that's pretty sick, right? That's very sick.
That's mentioned the audacity of doing.
Well, the audacity of it, yeah. You gotta have a lot of go to pull something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But wouldn't you think if you're trying to get away with a crime like that, you would try to detach yourself completely from everything? You wouldn't like take someone's name that you murdered, I think.
Okay. That's fine. That's a great point you made, but I'm gonna go into another case now.
Okay.
You know, when I looked at the family, they came in my home here with the media, and we were sitting in, and I can mention this one, this has been in the media, and it's all, they're still watching the individuals, but it's been in the media, Karen Coghlan murder case.
Mm-hmm.
And they sat there, and I'm saying, you know, it's really funny because the only way we're going to really get this guy to come out after 32 years of this case not being solved is me putting ego in the paper. And you got to tell it like I say it. Like, I know he goes to the graveyard, and that's why the flowers are taken. He goes there for his sick reprieve. He wants to have the forgiveness that he's seeking for doing this. And I said that part, and I also said different things that were related to, like, the partial license plate, his exact name. 3 days prior to her being murdered, she broke off with her boyfriend, and the boyfriend was the name that I gave.
Oh, my.
They had back in 1974, and back in 1974, they had him and the other guy I mentioned in the police station. But the way they looked at things back then is totally different than they do investigations now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So they botched it. And being a girl who's from the city, the body was found out in the country. The country police, we'll call them, wanted the case, and the city police wanted the case. So the bureaucracy of it all went into effect, and time went by, and 32 years, and here we are, and they're saying, okay, you know, we need some real clinchers. And I said, here's the clincher. The police says she was run over by a car. She wasn't. She was beaten by a baseball bat.
Oh, my God.
That's what I'm seeing, and the girl's sisters were all here. They were all crying. And I said, it's really funny. The female informant is going to come forward here some days from now, and it'll collaborate what I'm telling you. And they said, are you talking to the police? And I said, no, the police won't tell me any information. Mm-hmm. Only what if I give information? And the media said, there it goes, nope, there's no information leak here. And they said, because a female informant came forward just a couple days prior to coming to your home, Rob, and said they took her out to a baseball diamond. I said, well, that's why she showed me the baseball bats. And I drew a picture of the exact baseball house down to a T on the paper, and it was the exact park that they took her to. I said there was two places that she was at, not one, there was two. And sure enough, they killed her at the baseball park. You might as well say they did that. And went out, they dropped her off on a country road. And when we went back down that country road to where her body was found, I could hear her breathing, her last breath, but when she took, and how this individual stood over top of her and watched her die after he dumped her body on the gravel road. And I'm explaining all this to them, and everything's set. So they put this in the paper.
Hmm.
I think it was about 4 days later. I'm in the backyard with a bunch of people, and we're having And we're having a picnic or barbecue stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the phone rings, and it's one of the sisters. And they said, you were exactly right. You know, after 32 years, he broke his silence. He called everybody from one end of Canada that was in the family to hear, swearing, demanding to know what you said. That's how you get him out.
This was the person who committed the crime then.
Yeah, he gave him, after 32 years, you know, demanding, swearing, wanting to know what he said, you know, he's hiding something, right?
Well, of course, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And here's another one. This is a real, everybody
well,
knows this case.
Can I ask you something really quick about that, though?
Go ahead.
You mentioned something really fast. You mentioned a part of this is the impressions you got, and one of the things you felt, or I don't know if you felt it or not, but was that you actually, you know, heard her last breath.
Mm.
Now, working with the way you do, do you actually feel what these people may have been feeling at the time? I'm wondering, you know, how hard this is to do. I mean, does this really have an effect on you when you do this, when you look into something like this?
Most definitely. I'll be honest. I cried a lot. It wears you down. I look at my family, and I'm very sentimental on any case I've done, on anybody I touch and go to homes and read, or in even... You'll even notice, like in the Dead Whisper movie, I tell the fellas, I said, you know, I feel like crying right now, and it's on film, and I'm admitting it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I feel the pain. I feel exactly what goes on. I see it. It's like I live it right there. It's pretty amazing. How can I explain? Here's a story.
It has to be difficult. It has to be so difficult to do that.
It is. It renders one very humbled. It really does. In the way that you look at human life and you really respect every moment you live, it's very difficult to see a mother's eyes and she says, I want my baby back. And what do you do? You know?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. Go ahead.
Well, I was actually today, this is nothing near the magnitude of what we're discussing concerning this case, but today I kind of got... This, as far as the sentimental feelings you get, today I was kind of flicking around the TV on a break. I was working all day and stuff, and I took a breather and had some lunch, and I was watching Tube, and I went on one of the Discovery Channel, we'll just say that.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a special on there about this little girl. And she was born with a horrible, horrible, horrible disfigurement. Her face was literally twisted the wrong way. It was... And when I first saw it, I mean, I think everybody's reaction was like, oh, my God. You know, it takes you back. Like,
right.
Oh, my goodness, you know. And the show was more or less like how they were going to do reconstructive surgery on her
mm-hmm.
face, realign everything so she can breathe correctly, all these things, right? And this little girl, from the neck down, she was just a normal little baby. She was just a normal little baby, you know, just a cute little kid. But her face was just totally, totally twisted. It was grotesque. I hate to sound insensitive, but it was just the scariest thing I ever
mm-hmm.
saw. And there's these two parents, right? And they love this child.
Mm-hmm.
They love this child. This is their baby. They love this child more than anything in the world. And they come up to her and give her a kiss, and they hold her, and they play with her. And one of the things they said was that, like, one of the big surgery they had to do to, like, really, like, more or less straighten her jawline
mm-hmm.
was they're like, you know, every time before we go into surgery like this, we tell her, look, she was about 2 years old this time. Every time we go into the surgery, we tell her, look, honey, we've done everything we can for you. We love you. We're doing everything we can we know to do the right thing. We're trying to do the right thing for you. So if you don't make it out of this, you know that, okay? And it was for them, too.
Is the goal of tonight's show to make me cry?
Well, this is what they told her. They're like, you know, it was also to help us, too.
Mm-hmm.
It was also to help them. Like, you know, we didn't want, if she was to pass away in surgery, we didn't want to have to live with the idea that we didn't do everything we could to help her, to help
right.
our child out, right? And I have to say, Rob, it was kind of one of those feelings. I kind of sat there for a minute, and I'm like, you know, I'm not a parent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a parent, but I do have a family,
mm-hmm.
right? And I kind of sat there for a minute, and I was taken back for a minute. I kind of choked up there. I'm actually kind of choking up a little bit right now.
Don't lie.
I'm not laughing. I'm not laughing about it like that, but I am choking up a little bit. So I understand these sentimental feelings you get doing something like this, Rob. I mean,
yeah.
I can only imagine that, you know, how painful this may be to do this kind of work. That's why I commend you for doing it, because I don't know if I can handle it, Robbie. I don't think I can handle it, honestly.
Well, you know, sitting there as a kid thinking I'm a freak. And, you know, everybody's heard stories about this and what have you.
Yep.
You know, people say, you know, wanting to be a or would be a freak if I come forward and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
I laid it all out in my first book. You know, I just told it how it was, and from age 3, 4, right up. And now I just, you know, it feels good to come out and talk about it because that's my reprieve.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I find the solace, is being able to at least offer it up again, and being able to be there for people and help mm-hmm. them is one thing. But when it comes into, like you were talking, into your zone and you're touched, it pulls your heartstrings. It really does.
Yeah, it does. It is really something. I mean, just, you know, it's a weak example, I think. But, you know, I have those days where, you know, I see something really bad that's happened to somebody or, you know, I mean, especially a child. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't care who you are. I mean, if something happens to a child, especially a very young child, they haven't lived life yet. They haven't experienced the things that, you know, my old behind has. I mean, I'm 31. I've pretty much, well, I haven't seen it all and done it all yet, but I think I have a pretty good grasp on how things work nowadays. But when something happens to a little child like that, that's something that really just kind of, you know, it's hard to deal with. You know, even if it isn't your child, because what you do, like you said, Robbie, you have these sentimental feelings, and then you look at your family. Right?
That's right.
You look at your family and go, my God, you know, that's, you know, where I'm kind of. I tell you what, you know, about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, my grandfather passed away, right? I'll share this. We're not even going to take a break here. We're just going to go through a break. Is that okay with you, Robbie?
Oh, that's fine by me.
4 or 5 years ago. When my grandfather passed away, my grandfather Lambert, mm-hmm. on my father's side, when he passed away, that was a real revelation for me, I think, which it should be for a lot of people, I
mm-hmm.
think, because that was the first time I honestly ever saw my father,
mm-hmm.
big, tough, grizzly bear Dad L, break down. He's going to kill me probably for talking about this, but whatever, you know. that was the first time I ever saw my father completely broken down, completely shut down, and at the time, possibly, I don't mean this in a negative sense, but a shell of a man. He lost his
mm-hmm.
father, right?
Yep.
And at that time of my life, I was out of my parents' house for a couple of years. I had the job. I thought I was, you know, king stuff and whatever, and I didn't need my parents anymore. They, you know, that
mm-hmm.
I'm on my own. I'm independent, right? I've been working my life to be independent. And seeing my father and my mother in that state, because my grandpa was a cool guy, by
mm-hmm.
the way, too. Seeing them in that state, it nearly crushed me, too. It's very difficult to deal with something like
mm-hmm.
that. And after that day, that's the reason that I call my mother every day.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason that I talk to my father every day, too, now. Since that day, I have always made sure I keep in contact with my parents. I need my parents.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of kids out there, I don't know why we're doing this, but I'm going to shut up here in a minute, Robbie, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay, that's good.
A lot of kids out here nowadays, and this is, hey, I don't care if this isn't paranormally related, there's a lot of kids out here I see, and I was a kid too, I was this kid too. Their parents don't know anything, they're stupid, they don't know anything.
Yep.
You're going to learn someday.
Mm-hmm.
That is true.
You're going to learn someday like I did, and I had to learn the hard way, that you need your parents. Don't matter how much money you make,
mm-hmm.
how far away you move away from them, how independent you are, this is just maybe it's just me, but
it's
you need your parents. You need your parents. That's very, very important. Do not shut your parents out. Listen to what your parents have to say. And that's my little public service announcement, I guess, today.
Well, that's a hard lesson to learn sometimes.
It's a very hard lesson to learn. But it goes back to what we were talking about, Robbie. And this is where I'm going to shut my mouth here in a second, like I said about half an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
there is these sentimental feelings you get. And that's how I feel nowadays, though, too. When I see something bad happen to someone, or if I see something like, you know, if something happens to a young lady about 22, 23, I think about my sister.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about where she at. And I've done it. I can't count how many times I've done it. I've seen something on the news, and I call my sister and go, hey, Erica, how you doing? How's everything doing? I'm at work. What do you want?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm just seeing how you're doing. You okay? Yeah, everything's fine. Just leave me alone. Okay, bye, Erica. So, you know, we hang up.
Right.
I do that all the time, and I'm sure that's kind of how you feel too, Robbie. I mean.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we're all human first.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
You know, and we walk the path that's in front of us each day that comes to us. Everybody can put up the big bravado and, you know, I'm this and I'm that, but you know what? When it's time to be humbled, we sure are, aren't we?
Oh,
yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that goes like the case of my father. I mean, my dad's a cool guy. Bonnie knows my dad really well, and
I love your dad.
He's a fun guy. He's a great guy. He's a hardworking guy. He's always done. He is a great father. But that was the first time I ever seen him completely just shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a revelation of all revelations. I just could not believe. I never saw that before. I just never saw that before. I mean, I don't know what else to say about that. And you're right. We are human first. That's really what it comes down to, Robbie. You're completely correct.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, through the years of doing seminars and teaching, whatever, I'm going to throw a little plug here. My third book comes out in 2 weeks.
Okay,
all,
cool.
Yeah, sorry.
No,
but it's all based on you being just human and you loving yourself and loving the day that's given you. It's a daily read. Every page is a different read. It's all about you, and it's uplifting, and it makes you feel good, and it's humbling. And I wrote it, and I finally thought, you know what the heck, I've been teaching it all this time, and I've had so many notes and whatever, so I threw it all together, and yeah, here it comes.
So, and that's what this book's about. It's kind of what we're talking about right now. Am I correct?
It's about you, definitely. It's all about you, individuals, loving yourself, loving life, loving the day you live. It's called To You from Spirit.
Mm,
wow.
Okay.
While we're in the process of plugging it, where do people go to get your videos and your movies?
Oh, you can go to www.robbiethomas.net, and you can go on my site, see the media, and you can see all the products and what have you. And if you want to take a good gander at the movie Dead Whisper, go to deadwhisper.com.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want an autographed copy, got to go to my site.
And that site again is robbiethomas.net. I'll spell it out. robbiethomas.net. Check that out, definitely. Jeez, I'm kind of like taken back right now. I don't know. I'm sorry, Robbie. I didn't mean to go into all that stuff. It just kind of came up.
No, that's good.
This is live radio.
This is
live radio, and this happens sometimes, I guess. I apologize.
That's good.
it's just, you know, it's tough to deal with, you know, but it humbles you. What my line was after that whole situation when I came back, because I had to go, you know, my grandfather lived in Tennessee. When I came back from that trip, I came home, you know, back to work and stuff, and people were like, hey, how you doing, man? I'm like, well, all I can tell you people, and I'm not going to say the word on the air,
mm-hmm.
but I said mortality is a mother
mm-hmm.
thing, you know, because it really is, man. It when you're looking dead in the face of it in life here, what we're doing right now on this little green and blue thing that flies around the universe, boy, oh boy, there's nothing heavier. There is nothing heavier. It's
you're
crazy.
Absolutely right.
You're absolutely right.
What else?
No. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Robbie.
Yeah, no, it's I remember the very day I told my mother it was her time to go. And nothing's more humbling being 28 years of age. And all my life, I knew I had another sister that was adopted out there. And I used to think I was the one adopted, or no, I had another sister out there from age 3.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother met my father many years later and had me. But being Roman Catholic, it was very strict back then. Everything was hush-hush, and records were, you know, locked away. And she's much older than I am, so she was adopted out. Now, you have a 3-year-old telling you, Mom, I know that I have another sister, or I'm adopted. Something's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was very intuitive as well, and this is all kept hush-hush. The day I go over to her home, and I'm sitting there because I had the vision the night before, and I was told I'm going to be taken care of, not to worry, and this is what's going to happen, and I'm sitting there, and she's looking right at me, and she goes, you have something to tell me. And I just said, you know, I hate to say it, but yeah, you know, today's your day. And she looked right at me, deep in my eyes, and she said, I want you to go home, and I'll call you in a little while. So I leave, but knowing I should have stayed, but it's one of those states where you want to be there, but you're leaving. So I go home. I'm sitting in the kitchen with my wife and my best friend, and the phone rings about an hour and a half later.
Mm.
Sure enough, it's my father on the end of the line, screaming, it's your mother, it's your mother. And so we raced over, and all I remember is them doing CPR, bringing her out on the gurney in her purple socks. And I, you know, I'll never tell anybody ever again, ever, when it's their time. People say, how do you know this stuff, and where does it come from? Another example was on my show, it's archived. If you go back a few weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
a lady, her son's in Iraq, and she says to me live on the radio, is my son coming home? And I'm seeing everything, what's going on. And I said, yeah, he's going to come home. There's going to be a change in life. and you're going to have a new start. But what I actually seen was he was on patrol, and there was a bomb gone off. So happened was he was in patrol with his three friends or troop members. Three of them died, and he had a big chunk in his back blown out, but he was okay. But I'm not going to tell anybody this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? So sure enough, she writes me, and I get calls, and it was about 2-3 days later after that show, and they're saying, you know, he's in hospital and blah, 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 and now he's in Texas, and he's sitting up. He's able to brush his hair now, and he's doing fine. Mm-hmm. I keep in contact with Barb, and I do a show, like a little segment in my show about soldiers abroad where you can write letters and what have you. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that was all there, and how I'll never in a million years, and I swore the day that I told my mother I would never tell anybody anything like that again. It's just not up to me.
Well, yeah, you know, while I commend you for doing what you did with your mother, you know, that would be really something heavy to lay on somebody.
I don't think I could do it.
I don't think there's anything heavier to lay on somebody to go, hey, look, you know, sorry, you know, but it's time, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I know. You know, with the way she looked at me, Scott, mm-hmm. it was right through me. She knew. So it was like, here we are, she passes, and then they did a big radio show, and the media was down, and they brought my family over, and they said, Rob, all those years you were exactly right. Your mother left you a gift, and they presented my sister to me.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
So you go from age 3 to now knowing things, and mm-hmm. I'm sitting there, and I lost my best friend, and then in the same sense, I've gained a sister.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she was a spitting image of my mother.
Oh, wow.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, with anything, I found, you know, with any sad event like that, I mean, we both know, Robbie, that it's a horrible thing, you know, losing my grandpa back in the day like that, losing my grandma. I'm faced with a lot more. We all are faced mm-hmm. with a lot more. And that's just, like I said, mortality is a,
mm-hmm.
It's a horrendous thing to deal with.
That's right.
But there's always, I think, when somebody passes away, there is a new beginning.
Mm-hmm.
There is things that they've left behind that you can remember them by.
Absolutely.
There's wonderful things that you can remember them by. My grandfather, I can tell story after story because he was a prankster above all pranksters. some hilarious things that he pulled back in the day. He was your you know, your typical Southern man. Everything was yay big. And
mm-hmm.
I'm pointing to my arm right
yep.
now. Everything was yay big, from the fist to the end of
That's
to the elbow.
My grandfather
Everything
was
yay big. You know, those are the things I think about when I think about him now, right? You know, and that's what keeps me. That's what makes me smile about the guy. That's what makes me smile about, you know, thinking about him, about, you know, how wonderful he was. He was always there for us. All those things. I'm sure you do the same thing too, Robbie. I mean,
oh, you betcha. You know, I went a step further. I went and sat and had many lunches with my grandfather, right? And I thought, what a better way to culminate stories and stick them in my second book. So I did. And what it was I used to say to him, why are you listening to the obituaries on the radio for? Because I used to go and sit there with him. And he goes, I'm listening for my name, see if my turn's up. I'm thinking, you know, oh, my gosh, you know.
Oh,
here's this old fella, and he's cracking jokes like this. And he goes, why do you think I moved so close to the funeral home? I said, well, why? He goes, because I don't have too far to walk. I'm like,
oh my gosh.
You know, yeah, he's the bomb. He really is, you know.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
But you know what? I mean, but on the other side, yeah, I mean, I don't want to see people living like that or thinking like that. At the same time, though, it's refreshing to see someone kind of have a sense of humor about it, though, too. And go, hey, it's a fact of life. Deal with it. Let's have fun while we're here and make jokes about it. You know?
Then my grandmother, for about a year, she probably started about a year before she passed.
Mm-hmm.
We'd just get done with a holiday meal or something. The whole family's all happy. And mm-hmm. she'd just start taking jewelry off her hand and go, here, I want you to have this when I die.
Oh, my. Oh.
It's almost like she knew that it was coming.
Yeah, I remember when that happened, too.
She would just sit there and hold her hands out and go, okay, which one do you want?
No.
And it's not a conversation you want to have, but
no, it isn't.
She would just laugh about it and be, okay, I'll mark down that this one is yours and everything's fine.
Well, my dad made a comment like that the other day, too. He didn't, like, take his wedding band off of his hand.
My grandmother did.
We were discussing something, and we were talking about money, like me and my dad always argue about money or whatever when we're. That's how we
mm-hmm.
communicate. It seems like we complain about work and argue about money.
That's how fathers are.
And I'm like, I'm a stupid money thing. Money, I hate money. It's stupid. He's like, well, don't worry. You know, when I'm gone, you'll be rich. I'm like, hey, I don't want to hear this stuff. Mm-hmm. Come on, man. I don't want to hear that, right? And he thinks it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, what have we been talking about here for the last 20 minutes? That's my father.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be that man. I'm going to be that man that he was 5 years
right.
ago someday.
That,
ooh, God, it sucks.
That's just as bad as as going to your parents' house. You know, you're going over for your birthday. Everything's happy.
Yeah.
And they pull out these papers and show you that they've bought their cemetery plots, their
headstones, their casket.
Oh, man.
They've bought everything.
I can go one further. My parents did that and showed me mine.
Oh. Nice.
Yep.
You know what's even better? My grandparents bought their plots a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
And my grandfather is a bit of a jokester. So they were going to the cemetery to visit, I forget whose grave.
Mm-hmm.
But my grandfather says, gee, I feel really bad. That grave over there doesn't have any flowers on it. And in the whole cemetery, every grave had flowers on it.
Mm-hmm.
My grandma's like, well, just take some out of here and we'll walk over there and
yeah,
put
yeah.
them on there. They walk over there. It's their headstone.
Oh, wow.
And he knew that.
Nice.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I'm fried now. Thank you.
That's Grandpa.
Robbie. Yeah. I mean, those things all tie in. I mean, that's you know, people. I know some people think you know, the people that investigate the paranormal or psychics like yourself. I know people have told me doing the work that I do and the stuff we do on this radio show that, you know, well, you guys are just obsessed with death. That's just morbid. You're obsessed with death. And I'm like, you know what? Actually, once you get into this for a little while, you become more obsessed with life, man.
Absolutely.
You become more obsessed with life.
Yeah.
You find, and I know through Ghostly Talk, I've lived my life to, I think, a lot fuller by
mm-hmm.
doing this show. But, you know, going out there and exploring these places and learning things from, you know, wonderful people like yourself, for example, that's living life.
Mm-hmm.
No, that, oh, most definitely.
That's not being obsessed with death. I think that's being obsessed with life.
That's right.
And that's super important. I think that's super important for people to do.
Well, my house here is a porthole. And when I say porthole, my wife and my kids have seen what I see because it comes right into the home. I'll be laying in bed at one night. And I'll be sitting there, and I'm watching the light in the living room go off and on, and there's pounding on the walls in my bedroom, like really pounding. And my wife's there, and I go, hey, look up, look at this stuff. And she hates that. And she looks, and she goes, oh, my gosh, she pulls the covers over her head, right?
Mm-hmm.
And another time, she's in the living room, and I went to bed early, and all you hear her is scream. And she comes flying around the corner, jumps in bed, and says, you're never going to bed early again. The lights are going off and on in the living room. They're flying across. There's, like, orbs going. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff. My little girl.
Oh, my God.
Mike, you ready for this one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I got many stories. I wish we had another hour. I can tell you about bodies being dug up and everything.
Oh, yeah.
My little girl, we built a pool in the backyard, and we dug up bones and body stuff, right? But for the longest time before we'd done that, I said, you know, there's a little boy running around in the house here. And so Mac is only 7 at the time, and she's upstairs going into Jessie's room, which Jessie's the older girl, so, you know, little girls want to go play with their stuff. So we can hear her walking on the ceiling there, going into Jessie's room. I go, listen to the kid. You know, all of a sudden you hear scream, and she comes flying down. She falls down the first set of stairs, and then she gets up and she's running. She falls down the second set of stairs, and comes right in the living room and runs right to us, screaming and crying. And I said, what's the matter? She goes, the little boy was, because when you turn the corner to go right to Jessie's room, it's like you're walking down the hall and you have to turn right, and it's a 3-foot. Step to the doorway.
Mm-hmm.
She said, "There he was, right there." So it freaked her out.
Oh my!
She said, yeah,
we have to come over to your house and do some work.
Absolutely.
It sounds like.
Yeah, there you go,
Robbie. I'm aware that you have to get ready for your radio show. Do you want us to let you go now?
Yeah, that would be good.
I know you need some time for that. By the way, what is your show? Why don't you? I want to plug that show. I want to know what's going on with that.
Yeah, A Link to Heaven Radio on AchieveRadio.com.
Ooh, check that out for definitely. And that's a link. Is it there's a website for that too, I imagine. That just goes through your website, right?
Yeah, you can actually go right to my website. Right on the front page there, you'll see my radio show and a weekly article for United Kingdom magazine as well.
Everybody definitely check that out. Robbie, I have to say that our conversation went in a direction that I never thought it would. I think that, but everything happens for a reason.
Absolutely.
Everything happens for a reason, and I stick by that. I'll stick by that to my grave, I think. For lack
it was
of a better
most
term,
enjoyable. Right?
Yeah, thank you, Robbie. Thank you for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And we'll do it again. We'll definitely
you
do
betcha.
It again.
Thank Talk
you, later.
Thank you.
Bye, Robbie.
Bye-bye. Now.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
That was deep.
Yeah, man, we haven't done that in a while.
No, we haven't.
You know, okay.
You need a hug.
I mean, just so you people know, there wasn't no violin music playing in the background while we were doing this.
No.
You know, our producer, which we don't have one, didn't start playing violin music, all right? I like to make a point when we do this show, because Doug isn't here to explain this in full detail.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what we're going to do when we bring guests on this show anymore. As a matter of fact, we pulled back on, I mean, we have pieces of paper in front of us and stuff, just to give us a little guide of what's going on, you know, with a bio and whatnot. But we don't plan this. When we're on break, like we say all the time, you know, we're like, hey, what do you want to talk about?
Yeah.
All right, we'll talk about that, and then we'll talk about that, and then we'll see. And I'm sure, you know, I'm looking at the list of stuff we had listed to talk about Robbie with, and we touched on it. I think we did a pretty good job of touching on everything. Usually we don't.
All of that within the first 15 minutes.
And then we got into like, yeah. But, you know, that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens. You know, the show is not scripted. We don't have a producer. We don't have anything like that. We just kind of do this thing, right?
And that's why I love it.
Yeah, well, and sometimes this stuff happens. So the people out there that are tuning out as we speak, okay, fine. See you later. That's totally cool. But this is, you know, this is what life is about. And I mean what I say about that. I'm sure you've heard it, Bonnie. You've heard it, Keith.
Yep.
I know Doug's heard it before also. You know, when you're a paranormal investigator or you're an amateur paranormal investigator like we are, a lot of people will tell you that. Like, well, you're just obsessed with death.
Mm-hmm.
That you're morbid, you know. That's disgusting. Well, you know, it's an interesting subject, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think we, through ghostly talk and through going into the paranormal as deep as we have, I think all of us have lived life a lot more fully by doing that. And
absolutely.
I think that's the opposite of what people think about what paranormal investigators do. And I think anybody listening to this show should take that with them. That's a very important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially coming out of Halloween, because, you know, I know we get a lot more, you know, I've been saying it all, I said it all October, you know, Halloween for ghost hunters or, you know, ghostly talk is kind of like, you know, Super Bowl season for the mob. You know, it's just as busy. Just watch The Sopranos 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
You'll know what I'm talking about, right? So, yeah, I mean, sometimes this stuff happens on the show. Hey, you know, and Doug and I put a lot of ourselves into this show, too. So that's kind of what happens here. Unfortunately, Doug's
You know
on
what, though? Death, seriously, it comes for everyone.
Yep.
Yeah,
well,
your head in the sand.
Death and taxes, man. Death and taxes. Well, I even shouldn't.
There's much truth in the saying, we're all born dying.
Well, yeah, you know, that's a, you know, I think that statement itself, boy, you want to talk about being a pessimist? Woo.
It's the truth.
It's the truth.
None
of
us are going to live forever.
It's the truth. I've also heard somebody say also, when you're born, that's when you start decaying.
I've never heard
you basically
that one,
start decaying from that day on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've always thought, well, you know, you kind of, you know, you're born, you grow,
mm-hmm.
you become a young adult, you become an adult, then you become a middle-aged person, then you become a milkshake or whatever, and you know,
milkshake.
I'm gonna take hits for that one.
Uh huh.
Just blame it on me.
That was Keith.
He
said
that.
That wasn't me. I think you become a. I can't even get my voice that deep, actually.
Neither can I.
But no, I've always thought that. But I've heard people say, like, well, yeah, man, as soon as you're born, well, these are usually people that, you know, have their hair combed over on their face and they have black eye makeup around their eyes and they listen to Marilyn Manson. But, you know, it's. I mean, you're born decaying, man. That's what it's all about. And I'm like, yeah, well, maybe you are. You know, I'm sure not all my joints work that great nowadays, but that means you have to stop living?
No.
The
whole point of that is the sooner you realize that and accept that, you can begin to live your life to the fullest.
Exactly.
Once you know you're not gonna prolong the inevitable.
Well, you start taking things not for granted.
Exactly.
My dad actually, one day I was at his work and we were talking about stuff and we were complaining about work. That's what we do. He's like, come here, I want to show you something. Because I was like, I'm just ranting. He's like, come here, I want to show you something. He takes me over to this bulletin board thing they have up on the wall of the shop, and he's like, read this sign. And the sign says, don't take life so seriously. You'll never get out alive.
Exactly.
And I'm like, whoa, now that's some deep thought going there, man, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, too, that that kind of ties in with this, which is it's hilarious. I'm on this Motorhead kick right now, Keith.
All
right. We can discuss that after the show. I'm on this massive Motorhead kick right now. I'm like, everything to me is Lemmy.
Mm.
The whole world runs on Lemmy Kilmister. Everything is Lemmy. He rules the planet. And I was actually watching a DVD, a documentary on them. And one of the things that one of his roadies, they've worked with the same road crew for like 20 years. They've had the same people doing their work. And one of the guys said, look, you know, a lot of people wonder what Lemmy's all about, right? And, you know, how he, you know, how he lives his life, so how he lives. The guy parties all the time. He's like, he's 61 years old right now. He parties so hard. He smokes a pack of Marlboros a day, pounds down the Jack Daniels every night. I've seen their writer before for their shows, so I know what these guys request. Two packs of Marlboro Reds, two fists of Jack Daniels, and then some meat. You know, that's what we want, right? How can a person be 61 years old and have done that for the better part of 30 years and still be on this planet? Well, it's very simple. And another person, they're like, because Lemmy doesn't, he lives a carefree life. Mm-hmm. He doesn't let things get to him. He lets it roll off his back. He don't take things so seriously. And his message, I think, and this is one thing I've learned about Lemmy, is get off your butt and do something with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I mean, do something positive, but get off your butt and do something with yourself, right? That's what it's all about. That's what I think it's all about, you know. And I don't care if you're, you know, a paranormal investigator, you run RC cars, you know, you like to do woodwork, whatever it may be, you know, you're doing something.
Right.
That's cool, man. Take some pride in that, because there's a lot of people that don't. There's a lot of people that don't. It sucks. There's a lot of people that just are very happy going to work, because they have to.
Mm-hmm.
You have to. They have to sustain somehow. And they come home, and then they phase out in front of the TV set.
Mm-hmm.
While that's fun sometimes, I don't think it should turn into a regular diet.
No.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't do that.
Daily ritual.
That's just kind of in lieu of what we just discussed with Robbie.
Because
we talked about some pretty sad stuff, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's some sad stuff.
It's not often on Ghostly Talk you get me and Scott to the point of tears, but not there.
Oh, I can remember the 3 years ago is the last time I think I ever really got this emotional.
I remember
on the show.
That one.
Yeah, that was a rough night. That was a hard night, man. I had a hard, oh boy, I don't even want to get into that thing.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, you know, there's all these people out there, they're doing these things, you know, and that's just a couple of examples, I think. You know, I don't know what the message is. There is no message with this show, usually. I don't know how to do these editorials.
It's whatever you get out of it.
It's whatever you get out of it. You know, go out there. You know, don't let people tell you if you are in the paranormal, which you should be if you're listening to this show, I hope. If somebody says that, you know, like, hey, dude, you know, you're obsessed with death. No, I'm obsessed with life, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's all about to me. I'm obsessed with life. I'm out here doing something. I'm out here trying to learn something. I'm out here trying to get something out of my work.
Absolutely.
That is, in my opinion, that's a work of art right there. That's a work of art right there, to make something out of nothing, to explore your mind. And like I've been saying this for years about this show, about the paranormal too. It took me a number of years to explore things otherworldly, to really become so much more aware of what's going on right around me right now.
Mm-hmm.
I consider myself from 7 years ago hypersensitive to my environment now.
Oh, yeah.
My attention, the detail, everything. I'm so much more sensitive about things. So I don't know what my trick is. And I'm not saying it's the right thing to do either, but that's kind of, I think that's the right thing to do myself. I don't know.
I agree. Let's take a break.
You all right?
Thank you. I'm fine.
All right.
I'm perfectly cool.
Are we going to have a group hug on break?
I think we're going to have a group hug on break because I don't know. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
I'm Bonnie.
I'm Keith.
We'll be right back after this.